My name is Jeremy Devins, and welcome back to the Quiet Mind Astrology Podcast. And today we're going to go deep into the topic of eclipses. What are the eclipses? What's the mythology? What is the actual astronomy of it? And then what's the meaning of it when this happens? Every 6 months, there's a solar and lunar eclipse. Sometimes there's partial eclipses, other times in the year. But this is a big portal of transformation, some of the most life-changing times of the year, every year, for everybody. But there's a lot of misunderstandings about them and a lot of missing of the depth of this topic, which I love to get into. So I'm going to share that today. And if you want to know more about your own birth chart, go to quietmindastrology.com, get your free birth chart, and you can sign up for free weekly horoscopes and even schedule a one-to-one reading with me there to talk about your Rahu and Ketu and any eclipses coming up and the six-month eclipse portal window that you're in right now. So first of all, let's look at the mythology and the meaning and the deeper astronomy of eclipses. So here we see a picture of the ancient Hindu mythology of what the eclipses are about. And we're going to talk about this in a little bit. But it gives you an idea of there's a lot more to the story than just it's an important time. So we'll get into that in just a moment. But let's start by just looking at what is happening in astronomy. So when we actually talk about eclipses, what are we talking about? Well, first of all, we've got to look at the phases of the moon. So every month, the moon takes a 27 and a half day cycle around the Earth. And this is how we get the new moon to the full moon, back to the new moon. And as you may know, the new moon, often a time of new beginnings, the full moon, often a time of completion and celebration. The new moon, when the moon passes between the Earth and the Sun, so the full moon, when the moon is on the other side of the Earth and getting the light illuminated from the Sun. So this cycle happens every month, 27 and a half days. This is where we get the 27 nakshatras and the deeper understanding of astrology and Vedic astrology. Beyond just the 12 signs of the solar cycle of 12 months, we get the 27 nakshatras, the lunar mansions of the lunar cycle of every single month. So we can go very deep with the nakshatras and understanding what's happening in a personal chart. Every planet is in a nakshatra, but also in the eclipses. When there's an eclipse in a nakshatra, that's a big portal of that energy of your life. But the lunar cycle is not this simple. It's not a straight circle around the Earth. It's a little bit more like a diagonal line, like you think of the rings of Saturn. Everybody you know is the rings of Saturn, it's a diagonal line. And the moon cycle around the Earth is actually like this. Not everybody realizes that. And that's where we get the north and south node. When the moon is at the peak, the top of that diagonal line, the north node, to when it's at the south, the bottom of that diagonal line, the south node. And when we have the moon reach that point on the north node and we have the new moon, that's when we have the solar eclipse. The sun is eclipsed. And then when the moon goes down to the south node and we are fully in line with the sun, that's when we have the lunar eclipse where the moon energies, the moon is eclipsed, Luna is eclipsed. So this lines up with the moving of the nodes over time. 18 months it takes for the nodes to shift into a new sign. But really what we're looking at here now first is just the moon going around the Earth in this diagonal line, so creating these nodes. And this is what it looks like when we have a lunar eclipse. You see the, if you're watching the video on YouTube or Spotify, the moon passes behind the Earth and the sun is now shining its light on the Earth and then overshadowing the moon. That's the lunar eclipse. The moon is eclipsed. And that's what it looks like from the moon. Kind of cool to see that. Most of us will probably never see this in our lifetime. But it's actually seeing the sun being eclipsed by the Earth from the moon's perspective. And we'll talk about what it means towards the end of this. So what is the actual meaning of all this? First, we're just looking at the astronomy, because that's where you start understanding. It's what the rishis did. They looked at the sky. They watched all this. If you live in a place with good, clear skies, you can see these things over time, too. And then what the solar eclipse is, of course, is when the moon is between the sun and the Earth. So the sun is eclipsed. And from our angle and perspective, it looks like the moon is the same size as the sun, so it eclipses it. And we can see how it casts this shadow on the earth, and that's the place where it's most visible to see the solar eclipse on the planet Earth. And then there's actually a line that usually traces, there's a path of visibility, which you can see again in the video if you're watching. If you're not watching, it's totally fine. I'm explaining everything to you. But you can see that there's a line where the visible eclipse is happening. It's not usually visible everywhere. It's usually visible in this certain line across the Earth. And that changes every eclipse. And generally, it's considered inauspicious in Vedic tradition to look at this. And modern science also, you need special glasses to look at this to not damage your eyes. So in ancient times, it's considered inauspicious for more spiritual reasons, but in modern times, we know it's actually not the best for your eyes unless you get these special glasses, but it's still considered inauspicious to look at the eclipse or do anything significant on that day. So in summary of what the astronomy is, again, you can see if you're watching the solar eclipse at top, the lunar eclipse at bottom, and it's all in Spanish because I'm in Mexico now. So nice to have a Spanish version here. And luna, I love the word luna for the moon, and then sol for the sun, S-O-L, the Latin word. And we actually understand the soul through understanding the sun. And we can be lunatics when there's the full moon and the lunar energy is most dominant. But again, you can see this here. This is the astronomy of what we're talking about. Pretty straightforward. But now let's talk about the mythology of the eclipses. So this is where now we look at the ascending and descending node, the ascending node Rahu, the descending node Ketu, and go into deeper understanding of what's happening here from the ancient Hindu perspective, because it's so much deeper than just the astronomy. So in Hindu mythology, Rahu and Ketu are celestial entities known as the lunar nodes. They are considered shadow planets because they're not real celestial bodies. They are points along the path of the moon. So they're considered shadow grahas. And they're associated with the eclipses, both solar and lunar. The story of Rahu and Ketu is often recounted in the mythological narrative known as the churning of the ocean, Samudra Manthan. We'll take a look at that in a moment. So what do they say about the eclipses in the old texts? Well, when the moon, lighted by the sun, affects the sun with the darkness of its shadow, solar eclipse, when it is in line with the sun and the earth, then the person who does not know his area feels confused during the eclipse, and the regions too appear confusing. So it's a little bit poorly translated, but essentially you can see it's saying there's confusion in this time. And to the person who does not know his area feels confused during this eclipse. So there's a sense if you are sovereign, centered, intentional, on a spiritual path, conscious, this won't affect you as much. But if you're just kind of following your whims, going with the reaction to society and all this, this time can be very unstabilizing and you will not see things very clearly during this time. And this can be even more confusing time for you. Even for very conscious people, this can be a very confusing, uncertain time. I see it every year, every 6 months in the eclipses. People are like, what's going on? Where am I going? What's the next phase of my life? What's the next step? It's a time to reevaluate all that. So if you're on a spiritual path, it's not as bad. But if you're not on a spiritual path, it can be very confusing and difficult. So we see here the story of the churning of the ocean. So according to the myth, once upon a time, the devas, the celestial beings, and the asuras, the demons, decided to churn the ocean of milk to obtain the nectar of immortality. So you can see this visualized here. There's a whole lot of deeper mythology I won't go into today, but kind of keeping it simple today. But they use Mount Mandara as the churning rod and Vasuka, the serpent king, as the rope. During the churning process, several divine beings and objects emerged from the ocean. Among them was the divine elixir Amrita, which both devas and asuras desired. However, Vishnu, in his avatar as Mohini, the enchantress, intervened to distribute the nectar only to the devas. So a little bit of review of what we're saying here is essentially the devas and the asuras, the celestial beings and the demons. We could say angels and demons, we could say good guys and bad guys, are now having this sort of churning, this sort of battle that is to bring about this nectar of immortality of Amrita. Now, this is not just a fanciful idea. This is something we can all understand internally. We all have these internal angels and demons, good guys and bad guys, positive and negative energies within all of us. Just like every atom in your body has a proton and neutron, there's negative and positive potential in everything and every being. And when those things engage with each other, like in the teachings of Carl Jung, who I love, where he talks about engaging with the paradoxes of the light and shadow within ourselves, not shying away from them, not avoiding them, not projecting them on others, but actually owning them and integrating them and churning these energies within us, we create an access to this, well, so many things, but one of them is this divine elixir, this nectar of immortality or Amrita. And this can happen through just going deep within, through meditation, through spiritual discipline, through tapasya, the spiritual discipline like a yoga practice or meditation practice or a service practice, volunteering, any sort of discipline you take on, mantra, chanting, pranayama. This engages with these parts of ourselves, therapy, any sort of healing modality. You're engaging with the shadow and the light, the devas and the asuras within ourselves. So it's not this external thing. It's not this like weird mythology of angels and demons that we can't relate to, but it's actually something we can all engage with every day. It's like if you're projecting on somebody, if you look at someone and you're like, oh, they're so much prettier than me or so much smarter than me, you're projecting your light onto them. You're seeing them as the deva. This so often happens with celebrities and leaders and this kind of thing. Or if you're projecting your negativity on others, they're so that I could never be that. How could they do this? They're idiots. They're disgusted by them, whatever. You're projecting your shadow onto them. If you spot it, you got it. You can't see it in someone else if it's not within you. And ultimately, in my opinion, in my experience with this, you get to a point where like everything is within you. You can see the hero, you can see the villain inside of you. You can see the potential for saving someone's life. You can see the potential for taking someone's life. All within all of us. Like that potential is there. And it's not that we pretend it doesn't exist or project it on others, but we choose how to engage with it. So we have this inner churning available to us every day. And one of the fastest ways to see it is your judgments of others, good or bad. And you can see, if you see something in someone else, there's likely something in yourself to explore. Like the saying you may have heard, if you point one finger at someone else, you're pointing three fingers back at you and one finger up at God, your thumb. So those three fingers pointing back at you and invite you to explore, how are you that? You think somebody is selfish? Are you selfish? And if we're really honest with ourselves, we can all be selfish. We can all be resentful. We can all be lazy. We can all be pessimistic, whatever the thing is. We can all be loving. We can all be generous. We can all be charitable or whatever positive qualities you see in others. So through this churning, we can access this nectar of immortality and enlightenment, this Amrita. Now, one more thing I'll say about this Amrita is it's actually present in babies. And the idea is that we have this limited, from birth, amount of Amrita. And you can see it in babies when their eyes are super bright and they're full of life and vitality. And that Amrita, the idea in the ancient Vedic teachings is that it slowly drips down from the brain to the back of the throat into the fire, the kumbha, the pot of the torso, of the agni in the stomach, the fire in the stomach, and it gets burned up. And as we age, we lose the Amrita, we lose the brightness in the eyes and the clear skin and the flawless, unwrinkled skin of babies to becoming more dried out, literally drying out in the skin, drying out mentally, may become more rigid, more stiff. Right, and they say in the Tao Te Ching, like whoever is a disciple of life is more supple and dynamic and pliable. Whoever is a disciple of death is more dry and brittle and easily broken. So on this path of embracing the churning of the good and bad within us and embracing these changes through the eclipses, when the good and bad are brought to light, we can awaken this nectar of immortality to be more bright, to be more self-illuminated from within, just from our nature, to channel and cultivate and harness this nectar. And it's not just this limited amount we have from birth, but we can actually cultivate it. And there's some interesting ways, we'll talk about this in a second. But I think just through yoga, spiritual practice, meditation, we actually cultivate the Samrita. And when we practice the bandhas, the neck lock, the navel lock, the root lock, we close the kumbha, the pot of the torso, and cultivate the nectar in the skull so it doesn't get burned up every day. So deeper topics here, I won't go too far more into right now, but this is the kind of stuff I teach in my yoga trainings and yoga mentorships. And I will be hosting a Deepen Your Practice workshop coming up soon. Go to quietmind.yoga/deepenyourpractice, link in the show notes, and you can sign up for that free workshop or catch the replay later. But all that to say, this deeper aspect of yoga and applying this to your life is available to all of us every day, but it's highlighted during the eclipses. And Vishnu, the sustainer deity of the universe, intervened in this battle of the demons to sustain the universe by only giving this nectar to the devas. So only the good ultimately prevails. And we see this in all mythology, all stories. Darkness has its time, and then good always prevails in the long run. And I think of it as like a 51-49% split. And there's even been a lot of research on flipping coins. And usually you'll see 51% heads, 49% tails. So my interpretation of all that is the universe is perfectly balanced, but just 1%, just a little bit more in favor of the good over the bad. There's always going to be bad. There's always going to be negative, but it's like 51% good, 49% bad. And if we pretend we don't have any bad, we're just disowning parts of ourselves. We just project it on others. We lose access to the truth, to our strength, to our power, to our immortality, to our vitality. You know, obviously I don't know anybody who's immortal. I don't know if it's really possible. In the old text, there are mentions of immortal people, but I think reasonably we could say for sure might live a little bit longer, healthier life if you're a little more optimistic and a little more feeding the positive energies in your life and integrating and working with the negative energies, not disowning them. And the eclipses are the opportunity to do that, where we have this cosmic battle within ourselves of the angels and demons, the good and the bad, the yin and the yang, light in the shadow. So much more to say in this picture, but we'll just leave it there for now. And we'll talk a little bit more about Amrita, what it says in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. And of course, the Hatha Yoga tradition, the Vedic tradition, they overlap a lot. So I'm going to mention the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is around 1400 CE. So this text is pretty significant and a few hundred years old. But it says, Amrita, the liquid of immortality, is like nectar. It exudes from the Chandra center, in the center of the head, deep behind the eyebrows. The juice is saltish, similar to ghee, with the consistency of honey. Who swallows this clear liquor dripping from the brain into the heart and obtained by means of meditation becomes free from disease and tender in body like the stalk of a lotus and will live a very long life. Have you ever experienced this? I can't say I've had a dripping honey at the back of my throat, but I've talked to yogis, I've watched documentaries, I've heard yogis talk about this, like people who it's their lifelong practice of yoga. What I have experienced through like immersive week-long meditation yoga retreats, hours and hours of meditation yoga over a series of days, these kind of practices I've done, there is a sweetness in the back of the throat I've experienced. A sort of wetness in the back of the throat. I don't know if it's this. I can't say for 100% certainty I've experienced this, because to fully experience this is a practice of Kachari Mudra, which I don't know anyone personally who's done this, but it's written that you do this by curling your tongue back to the to the palate, upper palate, and beyond, up over the upper palate, into this place where this nectar resides. To do that, you have to cut the bottom of the tongue. And for some people like me, the tongue is attached pretty much all the way to the tip. I actually tried to get my tongue pierced as a teenager, but I couldn't do it unless I cut that. Didn't seem worth it to me. But you look at someone like Gene Simmons, the bass player for Kiss. Obviously, he has one of those longer tongues, and I think it's called the frenulum, the connection there under the tongue. So some people have that very, very detached, and their tongue can stick out very long, and they can more easily do this. And in ancient yogic tradition, you would slowly cut that away. Sorry for the visual if you're very sensitive to this, but that's what they would do. They would slowly cut it a little more, let it heal, cut it more, until his tongue could stick out really far long and they could roll it up the back of their throat like this. And you can see a little bit in the image, the pink tongue collecting this nectar of Amrita from the back of the throat down to the throat. And there are yogis who claim to do this in India. And again, I have no personal experience with it, but I do have experience with doing extended yoga practices and experiencing a sweetness at the back of the throat, not from food, not from water, nothing else, just this natural kind of what I think may be the Amrita. And that idea is that you are generating this Amrita and cultivating it. And when you're practicing the bandhas, you're cultivating it in around the brain and not letting it just be burned up in the kumbha, in the pot of the belly. And you're cultivating this energy. So that nectar of immortality comes through deep inner work and also through deep meditation. And we have access to it right now, all the time, every day. And you can see this example of a yogi meditating on the moon and the sun and cultivating this energy. But let's go back to the mythology now. So we know this is what it's about. These devas and asuras come together. They're churning the ocean, demons and angels, to bring out this elixir of immortality. And in all of this churning and intensity happening, one of the demons snuck in. So as the nectar was being distributed, right, they cultivate this nectar. Vishnu takes this form of this goddess to give everyone, okay, let's all, we got the nectar, is the angels, let's drink. But one of the demons snuck in. This is Rahu. And if you're watching the video, you can see the picture of the demon here holding the cup of Amrita and beheaded by this form of Vishnu, the sustainer of life, by a discus, a chakra, a wheel. So Rahu disguised himself as a deva and managed to drink a few drops. Sometimes they say just one drop of the nectar of immortality, and that was enough to make Rahu now immortal among the gods, like Surya, the sun, and Chandra, the moon. And Surya and Chandra, the sun and the moon, saw what was happening. They're gods, they're devas. Like, wait a minute. Look at that. He's not supposed to be here. And then Vishnu's like, you're right. Off with your head. But too late. Then the drop of immortality had already gone down the throat. And now the head and the body are both immortal. So the head is what we know as Rahu now today. Ketu is what we know as the body. Vishnu, again, like I said, used the Sudarshan chakra, the discus, to cut off Rahu's head just as he's about to consume the nectar. However, because Rahu had already tasted the nectar, he became immortal. His severed head became Rahu, the body became Ketu. And as you can see, Rahu and Ketu's symbol on the left here, Rahu is depicted like a head with like curls or earrings maybe. And then Ketu is like the inversion of that. So it's like a U shape. The Rahu symbol is almost like a letter A. Ketu symbol is almost like the letter U. And there's also like deities or statues you can see of them as well. Ketu, the body, is often depicted with a serpent body. like an Asura demon, often associated with serpent energy. And they're on this level now, because they had the nectar of immortality, they're elevated to this level of deity, along with Shani, Saturn, or Guru, Jupiter, or Budhi, Mercury, and so on. So all the grahas, the planets of astrology, are on now equal footing with Rahu and Ketu. So since then, Rahu and Ketu are depicted as separate entities in Hindu mythology, with Rahu representing the head of the snake and Ketu representing the body. In astrology, Rahu is associated with worldly desires, materialism, and obsession, just like that gotta get the nectar and gotta sneak in and do whatever it takes to get in and just like manipulate, sneak in, get that nectar. And then Ketu is associated with spiritual liberation, detachment, and renunciation. So Ketu is just the body that's like, well, there's no more head, there's no more thinking mind. There's just the feeling, there's just the presence and embodiment. So like people who have like Ketu very strong in their chart are very good perceivers, feelers in the present moment. But people who have Rahu very strong in their chart are more analytical, can be manipulative, can be controlling, more driven, more ambitious, more seeking in the same way, like the clever Rahu to get in and get that nectar of immortality, can become obsessive and materialistic. On the positive side, it is this drive and pursuit energy, which we think about with like dopamine in modern times. Dopamine is really when we're in pursuit of something that is generating drive and ambition and dopamine. But of course, that can easily become addiction, and pursuing something habitually without it actually serving anymore. But that's Rahu can become addiction. Ketu can become detachment, where we just get lost. We just want to dissociate, escape. Lots of layers to this, of course, but let's leave it at that for now. But maybe understanding the mythology of Rahu and Ketu, the story of what they're about, gives you some perspective of what they really mean. And you could think of it as Ketu is the heart, Rahu is the head. This is a very gross oversimplification, but is one way to think about it. Rahu is like the brain, which includes the eyes, which are looking out of like, I want that, that's appealing, I want to pursue this, I want to go after this. And then Ketu is the heart and the body, which is more the feeling. And it's this intuitive instinct, and you can't necessarily rationalize about it, you just know. And wherever Ketu is in your chart, you have a sense of like just knowing that area of life. Like if you have Ketu in Virgo and nothing else, you know the Virgo energies, you just innately know it. And you could even say one perspective of this is Ketu is the past life. Rahu is what this lifetime is about, where you're moving towards. Ketu is what your past life was about, which you're now moving past and on from. You could say if Ketu was in Aries, your last lifetime was all about me, myself and I. What do I get? What do I want? And you got that down, and you know how to be independent, and you know how to focus on yourself. Rahu is always going to be opposite of Ketu. So that would put Rahu in Libra, where now you're focused on we, and us, and what is in service to the family, to connection, to fairness, to balance and compromise, and lessons about this. And it becomes obsessive, and you're constantly curious. And this kind of person could become like obsessed with learning about relationships and understanding relationship dynamics. And it, on the positive side, it could be a very good counselor in relationships. On the negative side, could be focused so much on others that you lose yourself. Ketu, loss of Aries self. So this is an example. Just one example. You can see, you can apply this to your own chart where Ketu and Rahu are this kind of axis of past life karma and this lifetime karma. So in relation to eclipses, it's believed that Rahu and Ketu swallow the sun and the moon during the solar and lunar eclipses respectively as a form of cosmic revenge. So Rahu and Ketu come back over the sun and moon, who effed up their plan, man. So the sun and moon ratted them out. So Ketu and Rahu come back to get their revenge every 6 months. Like, you want to tell me, you know, I can't be immortal? Well, I'm going to block you out. So who's the boss now? So every 6 months they get their revenge, they overshadow the sun, they overshadow the moon, and there's sort of a reset. I've talked about this like the ending of an act of a play. End of the first act, usually there's a going to sleep, a fade to black, You wake up, you're in this new act, you got a new perspective, next phase of life. This is what happens with the Rahu Ketu. It's like closing your eyes and then opening your eyes, and now you're in this new phase, new perspective. You have this momentary like overshadowing of like, wait a minute, what's going on here? What am I doing in this path of life? Is this really the truth for me? Is this really the right path? Ketu and Rahu are like, well, especially Rahu's like, where are we going? And then Ketu is like, how are you feeling about this? What is true in your body now? Let's shut it down and start it back up. In the nakshatra that it's in. So it's that area of life in particular, and that house that it's in for you, where it's like, let's close it down, close the eyes, reset, end of the act, start the next act. And then life is really like this 240 act play, you know, where it's just constantly every 6 months, end of the act and begin the next act. Or like if you go out like on stage performance, like and scene and then curtains up on the next scene. So the eclipses are seen as times of heightened spiritual significance and potential transformation, major portals of change. So what is it all about now? So little bullet points here, some meanings of the solar and then the meaning of the lunar eclipse. So what does it really mean when we have the solar eclipse? I get this question all the time, and let's just break it down here. 10 things to consider every time there's a solar eclipse, every year, twice a year. What does that mean in general? And then you go more specific to the nakshatra it's in and the house it's in for you. So solar eclipse, number one, it's a time of transformation and new beginnings, initiation of a new phase or chapter of life. Number two, intensified energy momentum. This amplifies energy and accelerates momentum towards your goals and aspirations. Number three, it's a catalyst for change. Solar eclipse serves as a catalyst for change, prompting shifts and breakthroughs in the aspect of life aspected and affected by the nakshatra it's in and the house it's in for you, for your rising and moon signs. Number four, opportunities for growth. The solar eclipse presents opportunities for personal and spiritual growth, inviting introspection and self-discovery, one of the most profound times for inner work. Number five, elevation of consciousness. This facilitates elevation of consciousness and expansion of awareness beyond the mundane. You can have massive breakthroughs in your thinking around solar eclipses. No psychedelics, no external intervention needed. Just through being alive and present and aware to your life, you can have massive breakthroughs and elevation of consciousness. Number six, breaking patterns and barriers. Solar eclipses encourage breaking free from limiting patterns and barriers, fostering liberation and empowerment. If there's something that's not in alignment anymore, what are you waiting for? If not now, then when? This time is really calling you forward to say, what do you really want? What's in the way? Why aren't you doing it? Number seven, manifestation and manifesting power. The solar eclipses enhance manifesting power and the ability to materialize intentions and desires. It's a very potent, fertile time, possibly for conception, like literal children, but also for any sort of creative inception, for any sort of idea, anything you want to manifest. Manifesting is basically channeling down from the crown chakra to the vision in your third eye, right? The spiritual divine alignment from this intention, connection to the divine, to the vision, to now you're speaking it into reality through your throat. You're making it manifest from your heart through your hands into the physical world, into your power and your solar plexus that take action and do it, your second chakra of creation to birth this thing from the womb or the sexual organs, and then down to the root chakra where it's the most dense and material. Now you've manifested through the chakras, through this energy that can happen really fast on the time of the solar eclipses because it's beginning this new act, and like things can change, things can happen fast. You see this a lot in movies. No new act starts and like, we're off to the races. New stuff is happening. Number eight, alignment with purpose. The solar eclipse supports alignment with higher purpose and soul's calling, guiding you towards fulfillment and authenticity. When you're out of alignment, you feel it, you know it, or you're told, or you get the reflection, and it's almost impossible to change. You can resist it. You can dig your heels in. You cannot change, but you feel it. It's like if you're in a yoga class and you're out of alignment in a pose and a teacher comes by and just touches you like right on the ribs where you're out of alignment, and you feel it. You can't ignore it anymore. Your awareness has been woken up to that misalignment, and you don't have to do a whole lot to change it. It's just, oh, okay, I feel my ribs turning right and I'm going to turn a little bit left. It can be very, very subtle, small changes, but those misalignments become more obvious and more difficult to ignore. Number 9, creative inspiration and innovation. Solar eclipses spark creative inspiration and innovation, fostering exploration of new ideas and possibilities. So fun, so exciting. What do you want to create? What do you want to start? It's a new moon, of course, as well. It's the solar eclipse. The sun is eclipsed. It's a new moon, so it's a new beginning. And then number 10, harmony and balance. This time promotes harmony and balance, both internally and externally, aligning with the natural rhythms of life. Where things have out of alignment, now you want to find balance, harmony, and bring things back to alignment and move closer to your Dharma now, which is an always moving target, evolving thing. When we talk about balance, like in a yoga context, if you're in tree pose, balance is never static. You're never locked into one spot and you never move. Balance is dynamic. It's always a little bit left, a little bit right, a little bit forward, a little bit back. So when you're finding balance in the time of the eclipses, it's dynamic, it's subtle. Sometimes it's just a very small internal awareness shift. Sometimes it's a little more grounding down so you can be more balanced. Sometimes it's a little more leaning to one side. Sometimes it's using a wall for support and you need some help during the eclipse to find your balance so you don't fall over. And then sometimes you gotta fall over. And that's part of learning too. It's just as important to fall over and get back up. And I often say this, and I'm not just saying this, but in a yoga class, the person who's falling in a balance pose is probably actually learning and growing the most of anyone in the class. If everyone's perfectly holding a pose and finding that little bit of a subtle balance, great. But for them, it may have become easy. But for the person who falls, and if you go through the eclipse and you fall and things just fall apart and it's messy and ugly, you're probably learning the most, more than other people. And it's actually a gift. It's actually a spiritual gift and a beautiful thing. If you're on a spiritual path, wonderful. If you're not on a spiritual path, it sucks. So you're here, you're on a spiritual path, so it's probably a wonderful thing. So that's our quick look at 10 meanings of the solar eclipse. So anytime you're curious, every time the solar eclipse happens, come back to this episode, refresh your mind what it's all about. And regardless of the sign, nakshatra, house it's in, these are the major themes. Now, transformation, new beginnings of what? Well, look what nakshatra it's in. Look at what house it's in. Intensified energy and momentum around what? Look at what house it's in. Look at the nakshatra it's in. And this will help you understand what it means when you go through this portal every 6 months. And now, the other side of that is the lunar eclipse. The yin and the yang, the light and the dark, always in this churning throughout history, throughout all of mythology, all stories. What's the meaning of the lunar eclipse? Number one, it's a time of spiritual liberation and detachment, which encourages detachment from your worldly concerns and facilitates spiritual liberation, the strong K2 energies. Number two, it's a time for karmic resolution and healing, providing opportunities for resolving past karma and soul level healing. So karma is just act. It's the act of doing. It's what you have done has a ripple effect and domino effect to what is happening now. And if you want to know what your past karma is, look at your life now. If you want to know what your future karma is, look at your next choice in the very next moment. So we are literally creating our karma every moment of our lives. And then, of course, there is past life karma that must be experienced in this life that we can't control. But we can control a lot of it. And if you know there's some unresolved stuff, and we all got it, can't avoid it, we're born into it. We've all got it, and it's the new layers always evolving, and every time this lunar eclipse happens, new layers emerge, and we get to go deeper. We get to learn more about ourselves. Again, on a spiritual path, wonderful. So we learn some new layer of understanding of our childhood traumas, or a trauma that happened in our early life, or maybe you've repeated a pattern as an adult in relationships 3, 4, 5 times. Now the lunar eclipse comes around and you're presented with this choice. Here's the same pattern again for the 6th time. How do you want to proceed? And because of the lunar eclipse, you have this opportunity for liberation, this opportunity to get out of that pattern, to jump timelines potentially, to spiral out, to not just loop in a circle, but to spiral up and out. And I think of life sometimes as this spiral out. That's how plants grow. So much of nature grows in this spiral out. And it's an opportunity from the lunar eclipse to not just repeat a pattern, not just drum up old patterns and karmas and say, oh, I've already looked at this, but to get a new perspective on it and have a deeper level of healing around it. Number 3, transcendence of limitations. The lunar eclipse invites transcendence beyond the material realm and connection with higher consciousness, where we understand this bigger perspective of life. K2 is the most spiritualizing force in the chart. It brings us beyond the mind, beyond the body, beyond like even the physical body, and K2 is the body, but it's beyond that even, into the energy, into knowing that whatever limits we perceive are just perceived. If you think, I could never do this, who am I to blah, 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 K2 says, bah, so what? Do it anyway. Number 4, intuitive insights and inner wisdom. The lunar eclipse enhances your intuition and access to inner wisdom and guidance. One of the best times for meditation, spiritual practice, and even if you're not doing that, you just go out in nature. The trees will talk to you. Nature will talk to you. Insights will just come. It is just gifted to you by the universe, even if you're not trying. But if you are open to it, if you are creating the space, even better, it can come through more clearly. And then maybe you don't have to repeat the cycle again and again and again. Number 5, sudden shifts and revelations. The lunar eclipses may bring sudden changes, endings, or revelations, prompting adaptation and growth. So many big chapters of life close and begin around the eclipses. Number 6, spiritual guidance and protection. The lunar eclipse offers spiritual guidance and protection on the journey of self-discovery and growth. So know that as you go into this deeper work, into this letting go, it can be scary, but you're protected. And it's actually, in my opinion, in my perspective, in my experience of testing this out over the years, when you hear the call, you get the message, it's clear. It's time to let this thing go. It's time to detach. K2, let it go. And you don't let it go, you suffer. In my experience, I suffer. When I do this, I suffer. When I've done this in the past, I've tested this, I suffer. It seems safer to hold on to the familiar. It seems safer to not let go. But when the message is clear, when you know, when your intuition is like lighting up, you try to ignore it, but you can't. Every time you ignore it, you get another sign, you get another intuition. Yeah, that's the thing. Let it go. Move on. If you ignore that, again, I speak from my experience. When I've ignored that, I've suffered more, and I still had to let it go eventually, or it was taken away from me and is feeling like this at effect to the universe where it happened anyway. It's like I knew it was time to leave this place, but then I got robbed. And it's like, okay, I just need to get the F out of here. I should have listened when I had the nudge, and it became a strong elbow into my ribs. And then it became a shout. Then it became unignorable, time to go. So ideally, you hear it when it's a whisper, because you're creating silence in your life. You're creating space, quiet mind astrology. It's creating quiet in the mind to hear the true self. Yoga Sutra 1.2, yoga is the quieting of the mind. Yoga is citta vritti nirodha, so that the true self can speak to us, so we can listen to the Atman, the true self. And when we hear that, the message becomes clear. Only you know what it is. It's time to let this thing go. Maybe your best friend knows as well, and they can tell you the truth. And if you let go, you're protected. It's going to be okay. Number 7, mystical experiences and spiritual awakening. The lunar eclipse facilitates experience of spiritual awakening and initiation into higher truths. It's serious stuff. I have many examples of this. I'll just say it can be very powerful initiation. And if things happen around the eclipse that are like, what the F? This is intense. I don't know if I can handle this. If you see it as an initiation, it's for your growth. It's an opportunity to up level, to become more aligned to your gifts. And if you see it as the universe challenging you, calling you forth, calling you to adventure, like the hero's journey, it's a wonderful thing. And you become this new person. Like the person you become on the other side of an eclipse is not the same as you were 6 months ago. And if you can look back at yourself 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago and say you're the same exact person as you were then, you're probably ignoring a lot of important messages from the universe. I doubt that you are the same person. I doubt you would make the same choices. I think you might have some really good advice to your past self, knowing what you know now. Stepping through that initiation. And initiations are not supposed to be easy. They're supposed to be difficult. When we're born, it's not easy to be born, to come out of a body of a human, to push a human out of your body if you're a mother. It's not easy. It's painful. It's messy. It's extreme. And initiations can be this way, especially in the lunar eclipse time. Initiations can be very intense, psychologically testing you, showing you parts of yourself that you suppressed, hid, or denied, or didn't really realize how deep that went. But it's initiation for your growth, and it's an opportunity to become more aware, more present, more yourself, more aligned with your gifts, more able to serve others ultimately. Number 8, the meaning of lunar eclipses is to bring clarity and authenticity to life. Helps you discern your true purpose and path. Sometimes the clarity comes through confusion and questioning a lot of stuff, wrestling with it, the churning of the asuras and the devas, the demons and the angels within. Clashing with these ingrained beliefs, these fears, these ideals. You've got to wrestle with it to have a victor and more clarity and the best idea to come out of this, the best certainty to say, this is the path, this is the light, this is the nectar, the amrita that you get out of that churning internally. So yes, there's clarity and authenticity, but there is often this churning internally to get there. Number 9, the lunar eclipses are a time that support emotional release and healing, fostering inner peace and wholeness. So you may need to cry it out, scream it out. Energy in motion is emotion, energy in motion. And when that energy is stopped, suppressed, denied, repressed, it becomes dense and it can become disease. And all disease starts from the subtle to go to the physical. So if you start with a feeling of anger arising and you suppress it and you don't express it, this can be stored in your liver and you start to have liver issues, liver spots, frustration, irritability, resentment, etc., etc. This can happen with any organ, any emotion, any part of the body. There's a whole world of deeper thought into that, but the short version is this is a time on the lunar eclipse to express. However that may be, music, singing, dancing, yelling in a pillow, going to therapy, watching a sad movie that makes you cry. This is a time to squeeze the sponge out of the emotions that are in there. And it might be joy. This is also sometimes overlooked and not really appreciated for how powerful this is. You may have unexpressed joy and gratitude. I think it's often easy to focus on the negative and to fixate on what's wrong or what's missing or what's lacking in our lives. Our brains are actually designed for survival to look for threats and danger. So we may notice the negative more and fixate on that, but there may be some positivity to express. Gratitude for somebody, love for somebody. And like, how beautiful is that to have unexpressed love that you can squeeze out around the time of the lunar eclipse and really let someone know how you feel about them, how much you appreciate them, how much they mean to you. So whatever emotion it is, this is a time that you can express that and release it. And now it creates space and energy can flow more easily through your system. And you're no longer a kinked up hose where there's some stuck anger here, there's some stuck joy over there. It's flowing, it's open, it's moving. Energy can flow through you more easily and you can be a channel for the divine. And now you have more access to allow whatever wants to come through in the next phase of life without digging your heels, without resistance, without energy getting stuck. So around the lunar eclipse, let it move through you. Find a way to have an outlet for your energy, your emotions. And finally, number 10, the lunar eclipses are times of integration of past experiences. They facilitate this integration into present reality, aiding in personal evolution and growth. So things from the past, maybe past lives, I don't know. I don't really go into that too much, but I can say for sure, early childhood karma, I've experienced this a lot around the eclipses, deep inner child healing, old relationship patterns becoming illuminated of like, what, how did I not see that? Repeating this and that pattern. It just takes time. You know, we mature, we age, we see these patterns in new light over and over again throughout life and new perspectives and things that we forgot that we knew. This is the time of the lunar eclipse where now we can integrate that past, current or past lifetime experience and wisdom, and now have that be a part of us that guides us forward. Rather than suppressing it, overriding it, ignoring it, now we've integrated it. We've integrated the insecurity. So now if somebody calls me a name or something, it doesn't affect me because I've integrated my own judging voice. And I have a relationship to it. It's like, sure, I can judge myself. You can judge me, whatever, you know, or whatever the thing is. You integrate these things and now they become more whole, right? We talk about integration. It's about making things whole, more complete. And I think the whole lifetime is about becoming more whole, not just I am a sun in Aquarius or I am a Libra rising. That is part of you. But we all have this inner wholeness that we're moving towards, and the eclipses move us towards that. And integrating the K2 elements, the lunar eclipse, the emotions, the mind, the spirituality in our lives gives us a more holistic perspective of the universe. Because when we talk about spirituality, we're talking about seeing the divine in all, seeing all in the divine, the Atman in the Brahman, the drop of the ocean in the ocean. We see the bigger picture, and from there, all this form and identity, prakriti of human experience and work and helping people and career and children and creativity, all the things we do, it becomes a little bit less dense, a little bit lighter, a little bit more free, a little bit more like when we're kids and we just play and we just let creativity flow through us. How cool is that? Lunar eclipse gives us an opportunity to free up energy, to be more creative, more inspired, more allowing life to flow through us. So again, anytime the lunar eclipse happens, every year, twice a year, no matter where it is, these are the qualities, these are the energies we're talking about. And every time the lunar eclipse comes up, I'm going to get more messages. What's this all about? What does this mean? Come back to this episode and you can review here. So this is what the eclipses are about. They can be a bit confusing at times. So this is why I'm always going to get these questions every eclipse season. Come back here. I'm going to refer people to this episode over and over again. So when that confusion comes in, this episode can hopefully give you a little more clarity, but we also need to go through that confusion time. Like no matter how enlightened you are, we all need to go through our stuff. We all need to go through our lessons. We all need to go through our ups and downs and our times of confusion and clarity at different levels in different areas of life. It's part of the cycle. Nobody's immune to it. Nobody's exonerated from it. So when it happens again, come back here, review this, and know you're protected. It's for your personal growth. It's for your spiritual growth. It's life lessons unfolding. It's bigger than we can possibly know. But we can do our best to be curious about it and say, maybe it'll play out like this. Maybe I'll play with these energies this way. Let's explore this. What if it goes this way? And it can be this fun exploration and discovery. So if you found this episode helpful, share it with a friend. It could really help somebody in eclipse season when they're confused and uncertain about things and really put it all in perspective, I hope. And leave a review on the podcast if you found it helpful. That also has a huge impact on helping more people see the podcast and learn this amazing ancient system of Vedic astrology that's so incredibly powerful. It's what I wish I had growing up, and it's been so life-changing for me and helping me get out of depression and find my path in life. So share it with a friend, leave a review, and if you want a one-to-one reading, go to quietmindastrology.com and we can meet on Zoom. We'll talk about your chart, your karmic path, your axis of Rahu and Ketu, because there is so much to be gained from your own path. And then every 18 years, you go through your karmic return of the nodes. That's a big deal, every 18 years of your life. So there's a whole lot to look at your own personal chart, and Rahu and Ketu are really big factors in all that. Thank you for listening, and look forward to sharing more with you next time on the Quiet Mind Astrology Podcast.